Welcome to Dreadful Digest, where we look at your favorite horror novels and rip apart their adaptations. I'm one of your hosts, Tessa Nelson, and we are joined by Aiden. Thank you for coming back. It's been so long.
It has been so long. It's been
forever.
I can't believe it's taken this long, actually.
I know. And that's on me.
Yeah.
That's on me, and that's my fault.
Honestly.
Yeah.
Better yourself, actually. Yeah.
So you love Hellraiser, and that's why I wanted you on this episode, because I'm a huge Clive Barker stan, and you love Hellraiser, so it just made sense.
Oh, my God. It's just the 80s gore is just, like, so top-notch. The 80s effects just, like, tie the movie in together. Mm-hmm. Love it. Mm-hmm. Love it.
And you didn't know that this was based off a book prior to this, right?
You told me that, and I was absolutely shocked, and genuinely a phenomenal book, and now I'm ready to pick up more Clive Barker.
That's good. Yeah. We covered Candyman a couple episodes ago. We loved it. And I've read Books of Blood, which is his, like, anthology series. I read the first one. Really good, and there's some films based on that as well. So I'm ready to dive into the Clive Barker universe. I'm very excited. But yeah, do you want to jump into your non-spoiler review? You can talk about the book, the movie, whatever you want to tell the people.
Jesus.
Where to even begin?
freaks, and more freaks, and a poor girl who is strung up along the way.
Kirstie in both versions?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I tried to dress like her today.
Minus
the brown leather jacket. I was going to wear it, but it's too hot to do that. So just a white shirt and jeans. That's all I got.
And I would have taken off my skin to cosplay Frank, but couldn't do that today. So
I was like, you could have gone with Pinhead. Just dude, put some nails on.
Dude, I was almost there and I was like, okay, like a box of nails from Home Depot.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm, like, set, but I thought that would have been a little too much.
Yeah.
A little too much.
That would have been a lot to deal with.
Yeah.
We got this really sick print today. I'm very happy about it. If you watch the video version, you'll see we got this really cool print of Pinhead. We got the book. The Hellbound Heart is the name of the book. And it was obviously changed to Hellraiser for the film. Did you finish your non-spoiler review? You were like, what freaks, else? Freaks, and freaks.
Freaks, and freaks, yeah. And then a poor girl. That's, I mean, like, what else can you say about that movie without, like, spoiling it? I mean, aliens?
Aliens?
No.
Freaky
little guys.
Yeah.
Freaky little
dudes.
We
don't know much about the Cenobites in both versions. We just know that they're from another realm, another world that, like, can phase in and out of this one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They like to be little freaks.
Mm-hmm.
They like to get their freak on.
Freaks and geeks.
Yeah. Yeah, little Patrick. Got a little Patrick star in one of them. One of the teeth chatterer.
Oh, teeth chatterer. And then there's the one that has, like, he kind of looks like he drowned, maybe. Like, his, like, skin is all weird.
Yeah.
That one I liked.
Yeah.
With the spectacles.
Yes.
I wanted to know more about him. What was his deal?
Yeah.
Freaky. But yeah, I really love Clive Barker. I love his writing. The way he can write, and I've talked about this in past episodes, but it's just so detailed, and you can clearly envision what he's describing, and it's gross most of the time, but it's so good.
Yeah.
And for this to be his first film that he directed, like, I gotta give big kudos to that, because that is a hard thing to do, and it's so, he made his first, like, directed film is so iconic. Like, the idea,
absolutely.
Like, Pinhead is such an iconic character, and it's, like, I mean, spoiler alert, but, like, Pinhead is not even that big of a deal in the book. He's more of a side Cenobite.
Yes.
But in the film, they really hammered home, like, this is, like, an iconic horror figure that's going to be remembered for years to come. And yeah, I mean,
and now we have 40 movies.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Now we have 40 movies.
I want to talk to you about the sequels later, because I haven't seen any of them. And
shit, me either.
Okay. I didn't know if you watched any of them or.
I remember watching the second one, but I don't remember what happens, except that there was, like, well, we'll get into that later.
Okay.
We'll talk about that later.
Yeah, because typically when I go into an episode, I love diving into the extended media. I love diving into the stuff that people don't typically watch or engage with.
Yeah.
But I was really crammed for time with this episode and with Twilight, and I was like, I don't have enough time to really dive into it as much as I'd like to, but yeah. I do at some point want to watch more of the sequels, because some of them look real goofy, and I'm very intrigued by that.
Oh, absolutely. 100%.
Like, we talked about in our Candyman episode the sequels to that, and it's like, they're bad. They're bad, but they're like, it's a fun time sometimes. Yeah. Watching a bad horror movie.
Oh, for sure. I mean, hello.
Oh, yeah.
Amityville?
Aiden's terrible. Wearing an Amityville horror shirt, and it's...
Yeah.
That movie is... We'll get into that movie, but oh, yeah, that's atrocious.
Terrible. Ooh. Terrible.
And you
so
loved
funny.
The book, but...
I loved the book. I was so excited. I thought it was real, and then I watched the movie, and that was just... We watched that together for the first time.
We were like, we didn't have much to say. We were laughing.
Yeah, we were just like laughing, I think, the entire time and being like, oh my God, what's going on? Like the cinematography, the pig.
The pace.
Yeah. Just terrible, terrible.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Well, you'll join us for an Amityville episode at some point. Yeah.
Yeah, we'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll get into it. So let's dive into... Hellraiser, shall we? I have a synopsis here specifically for the film, and then we'll dive into the book later on. So, in Morocco, Frank Cotton buys this puzzle box, and it's said to open the door to a realm of otherworldly pleasure. Fast forward to him being in a bare attic, and he quickly solves the puzzle, just figures it out. Which
very interesting.
I'll get into that. But suddenly, hooked chains emerge and pull out his flesh, tearing him apart. And this a Cenobite comes and resets the puzzle, and the room is...
sorry.
Wait, what?
Continue. I just said comes. I'm sorry. Okay, continue. Sorry.
So after he's torn apart, a Cenobite appears and resets the puzzle, and the room is restored to normal as if nothing had ever happened. That is our cold open. Later, Frank's brother Larry moves into the same house with his second wife, Julia, and his daughter, Kirsty. Larry is unaware that Julia had an affair with Frank before marrying him. And when Larry accidentally cuts his hand in that attic, blood drips onto the floor and resurrects Frank in a really ghoulish form. Julia is the one that later finds Frank, and she's still obsessed with him. She's, like, in love with this guy who couldn't give... a crap about her.
Absolutely. A freak.
Yeah. And so she agrees to help restore his body. Now, in order to do that, she has to get fresh blood. She has to bring in victims, basically.
Mm-hmm.
So Julia picks up men from bars, seducing them and bringing them back to the house, where Frank then drains their life force to help regenerate his body. Meanwhile, Kirstie's around, you know, living her life, working at a pet shop, doing her thing, having a boyfriend. And she sees Julia bringing a man to the house and follows her to the attic where she finds Frank. She manages to evade Frank and his advances and escapes with the puzzle box, where she just collapses and passes out and then ends up in a hospital. Yeah.
A little dramatic.
It worked in the book, but it was a little weird in the film.
Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm.
So awakening in the hospital, Kirsty solves the box again very quickly, and she accidentally summons the Cenobites. The Cenobites' leader, aka Pinhead, explains that they can no longer differentiate between pain and pleasure. When they attempt to force Kirsty to return to their realm, she informs Pinhead that Frank has escaped them. The Cenobites agree to spare Kirsty's life and recapture Frank instead, with the condition that Frank must confess to escaping them. So he has to confess and say his name.
Mm-hmm.
Kirsty then returns to the house where Frank has killed Larry and has taken on his identity by wearing his skin. Frank decides to kill Kirsty to complete his rejuvenation. He accidentally, in the process, stabs Julia and then drains her life force with no remorse. Frank then chases Kirsty. There's a lot of chasing in this.
So much chasing. Dear God.
Yeah. And when he is about to kill her, the Cenobites appear and hear him confess to killing her father. Now certain he is the one that they are looking for, they ensnare him with hooks and tear him apart again. When the Cenobites double-cross Kirsty and attempt to take her life, she grabs the puzzle box and banishes them by reversing the motions needed to open the puzzle box. Kirsty's boyfriend, again, she has a boyfriend, randomly.
Yeah.
He appears, he's there, and they both escape the collapsing house. Afterwards, Kirsty throws the puzzle box into a burning fire, and this guy who's been following her around throughout the movie He walks into the fire and retrieves the box before transforming into a winged skeletal thing, this skeletal bird, whatever. And he flies away, and then the box ends up at the same merchant that Frank had bought the box from at the beginning. So it's a bookend, basically.
Yeah.
So that is the plot of the Hellraiser film.
Yup.
Yes. Did I miss anything?
No.
It's a pretty simple plot, but the book and the film. So,
yeah.
But there are some minor changes.
Yeah.
Let's dive into the book research, shall we? The book was written by Clive Barker in 1986. It was originally published by Dark Harvest in its third volume of this anthology called Night Visions. But then he republished it later. This is the origin of Pinhead, although he isn't officially named until the film's sequels.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
A little bit about Clive Barker. During his early years as a writer, he worked as an escort, and this kind of helped him with his writing. It inspired him in a way. His experiences in the 70s made him want to tell a story about, quote, good and evil in which sexuality was the connective tissue. The look of the Cenobites were inspired by the S&M clubs that he worked at. So fetish clubs, basically, where people would like get crazy piercings for fun. And so you can definitely see that inspo in the looks of the Cenobites.
For sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So he came up with the idea of the Lee Marchand's box. This is what it's called in the book.
Yeah.
It has a different name and it's supposed to be French, but I can't do it in a French accent. So
Lee Marchand.
Ew.
Stupid.
Lee Marchand box.
Oh,
that's
my
really
God.
Bad. But yeah, he got the idea about this box because he essentially didn't want to do a cliche. He didn't want to resort to, quote, drawing a circle on the floor with magical symbols around it. So he came up with this box, and it was inspired by this puzzle box his grandfather brought him from the Far East from one of his travels.
Oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah. This book was actually written with the intention of eventually adapting it into a film, which is why it is set in one location, basically. At this point, Clive Barker was disappointed with how his books had been adapted, so he kind of wanted to take it on, and he said, quote, for me, it was a chance to see if I could put what I felt I was putting onto the page onto the screen, to form a narrative that would allow me imaginative latitude with the visuals, but which wouldn't be too large in terms of set pieces. The only way to do this was to write the novella with the specific intention of filming it. This was the first and only time that I have done that, but it was useful in that I worked through a lot of the visual problems in the novella, and the final screenplay didn't take that long to draft. Which is why, this book was published in 1967, and then the film came out, a year later. So
yeah.
It was a really quick turnaround. Although, we've been kind of having that trend with the books we've been covering lately, where a lot of the books come out and then a year later the film comes out. Like that happened with Rosemary's Baby. Next episode we're going to be covering Jaws, me and Sam, and that's the same thing. Like they were already in motion to get films out of the
book.
That's
books. So interesting.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean that happens a lot in the film industry where before books are even published they are sent to film studios. So I've definitely read a couple when I interned. I would read books that weren't even published yet.
That is actually so cool.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
That's actually so cool. I did not know that.
Yeah.
I think that'd be a cool experience just to read somebody's work that they're I'll give this to them, see what they think of it. Is this movie worthy? That's why, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very cool.
Yeah. Because as soon as it's out, you're already too late. As soon as it's published, you're too late. Somebody's going to latch onto it most likely.
Yeah.
So. If it's good.
Yeah.
Even if it's not good.
Valid.
So the novella actually received two book sequels. One called The Scarlet Gospels, written by Clive Barker in 2015. And another one called Hellraiser the Toll, published in 2018 by a different author.
Mm.
Yeah. I had never heard of these. I wonder if they're good. I don't know. I didn't read them.
May have to read.
Yeah, maybe. At least the Clive Barker one.
Yeah.
At least the Clive Barker one.
Yeah.
I don't know about the other one.
Yeah.
You want to learn more about the film?
Hell yeah, I do.
Let's do it.
Give me some interesting factoids.
Alrighty. So, like I said, the film was released in 1987, and it was written and directed by Clive Barker himself. Development of the film began before Barker's novella was even published. And this was, like I said, because he was disappointed with previous adaptations. So he wanted to direct it himself. He wanted to see if he could do it.
King. Love him.
Yeah. We stan.
Yeah, we stan.
We stan.
I love Clive Barker.
Yeah. Now you're a fan.
I'm barking up the tree.
I'm so excited for you.
Yeah.
To dive more into his work.
No. I'm so excited to read Candyman.
Mm-hmm.
Candyman.
Don't say it five times, though. Don't say five times.
Oh.
That's the thing. No? If you say Candyman five times in a mirror, then he appears. You're already two.
I'm at your house.
At two. Oh. No, it's still he would still come after you, though.
No. Stop. Stop it. I'm scared.
Now you're not going to be able to sleep tonight.
Yeah, I'm actually going to be shaking. Stop. Okay. Continue.
So Barker himself even considered naming the film Sadomasochists from Beyond the Grave. That's a very long title. I'm glad they... That's a
fucking mouthful.
Yeah, I'm glad they changed it. That's a lot. After filming, New World Pictures, which were the producers of the film, convinced Barker to relocate the story to the United States, which required overdubbing to remove some English accents. Could you tell that it was some actors were overdubbed?
No.
Really? It's very noticeable. Frank is one of them, as well as some of the extras. Dude, how did you not know?
Wow.
Oh my God.
I just watched that fucking movie.
His voice is so, it just doesn't
fit. It's terrible.
It doesn't fit his look, I feel like.
Yeah, it's terrible. But I thought that he was just like a creepy little guy.
A bad actor.
Yeah. Well, no, not even a bad actor. Mm. Like, I just thought it was just like creepy sounding little dude because it makes sense for the story. But no, okay, I'll have to rewatch it again.
Yeah.
And see, I've seen that movie so many times and I've never noticed that. Wow,
really?
That's crazy. Okay.
Yeah, even like there's an old woman extra and her voice was, it seemed like it was obviously overdubbed. It just sounded so weird and off.
Overdubbed is never a good choice.
No. I like the setting of it being in the United States. I forget which city they're in, but I don't know. They mentioned at the beginning.
Yeah.
But yeah, it would have been weird having moved to the U.S. and then everybody around them talks in an English accent.
Now, why did they leave Julia?
I don't know. No, because they mentioned that they were living in overseas and they moved back to his hometown. So it does make sense.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Okay. I'm like, if they're overdubbing everybody else, okay, that makes sense.
Oh, that would have been awful if she had
the entire cast. Goodbye.
Everybody except the dad and Kirstie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would be bad. Yeah. So during film production, Doug Bradley, who played Pinhead, he actually plays Pinhead in like all eight sequels. Pretty cool. He had trouble hitting his marks because he was in the makeup and he could barely see through the black contact lenses.
Oh, I bet.
And he was afraid of tripping over his skirts. So he was struggling a little bit.
Dainty little king. But love
hey,
him. Okay.
Hey, we couldn't tell. Tell oh, yeah. Watching it, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
So due to the box's delicate construction, Simon Says, who designed it, would lie on the floor under the Cenobites during some film takes. And in case it would drop, he would be there to, like, save it. So that if it broke, he wouldn't have to spend 8 hours to create another one.
Damn.
Yeah. Which,
you
like,
are
to
spitting some hard I'm facts sorry. At me. No, I love it.
I'm all over the place, but yeah, I thought these were interesting.
No, that's very interesting. 8 hours. That's crazy.
And it... Now I'll save my thoughts on the look of the box later, but I would not think it would take that long, low-key.
No, yeah.
It looks like just metal on wood, a wood block.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway. So after filming had finished, executive producers saw the footage and liked the film enough to want to invest more money in it. A few scenes were redone with a higher budget, like the end of the movie where Frank's body is ripped apart and he says that line you really like, right? What was the line?
Oh, Jesus wept.
Yeah.
And he ad-libbed that.
I didn't read that. I didn't know that.
That was not part of the script. He ad-libbed that, and that is literally like, I think about that and I get goosebumps because it was just so perfect.
How did we'll he get think to do that? That's crazy.
I know. No, just like his brain. Yeah. Amazing. Fantastic actor.
So then that was the actor that did it, and then they had to overdub it, I'm assuming?
No, because that was Larry.
Oh, it was Larry. Oh, and that doesn't make any sense. Because why, just because he put his skin on him.
That the voice would change?
Why he would have the same voice as Frank.
No, yeah. Oh, wait. Hey.
Hey, sorry, hey. Flat hole.
Oh my God. Flat hole. Is this going to ruin the movie for me?
I'm sorry.
I'm scared. Stop. This is not going in a good direction. Okay. Okay.
So the film was considered a commercial success, grossing $30 million from its $1 million production budget, which is really good.
Yeah, that's crazy.
A crazy profit.
That's crazy.
And I mean, the fact that they could do so much with $1 million is wild.
Oh my God.
Like they
God.
Are so, and we'll get into the crazy special effects, but like oh, yeah. What they could do with like a plastic bag, what they could do, I don't know. It's just like, the creativity, I can't even imagine. I mean, that scene where Frank's body is being rebuilt is like one of the most iconic things I've ever seen.
I fucking love that. I mean, every part of the movie is just like every part of the effects. That's why I love the movie is just because it's so 80s. But like that specific part is like arms shooting out of the ground and they're like little sticks. Yeah. And then you're like trying to figure out like what's going on.
Fingers are sticking out.
Yeah. And then like the stem attaching to like the brain.
Oh gosh. Yeah.
That was like crazy. Yeah. I mean, and the gooiness, ugh, very so sticky, gross. Very pussy, very nasty, but very cool.
Yeah.
Very impressive for like what it was.
How they thought to do that.
Exactly.
It's wild.
I think they might've spent all the budget on that part though.
You know, you might be onto something there because, yeah, anyway.
Some other parts, yeah.
Some other parts are a little cheesy.
Yeah.
We'll give credit where credit's due.
For sure.
So the film was successful. And of course, when a film's successful, that means you gotta take it for all it's worth. So there are
milk the shit out of it.
Yes. There are 9 sequels, a remake, and a multimedia franchise that spawned from Hellraiser. And Clive Barker even produced the most recent 2022 film. Have you seen it?
I haven't seen any of the remakes except for that second one, but that's crazy.
Yeah, I saw it in theaters as it was like a premiere screening.
Oh, cool.
With the director. I think the director was there doing a Q&A. And I enjoyed it. I think I watched it before I watched this one. So my original impression of Pinhead was the one from the newest film. Which I think the actor is a woman playing Pinhead, which is kind of cool. And I thought like some of the like gore was pretty good too.
When did you finally watch the original?
With you. You.
This guy.
You were hyping up the scene where Frank's body is being rejuvenated or whatever. And like talking about the special effects. And I think we watched it on
FaceTime.
FaceTime. Yeah. Yeah. So.
Banger.
That was my first time watching it was on a laptop screen.
Yeah.
So I'm glad I rewatched it with better quality.
Yeah.
So there's a Hellraiser television series that's apparently in development for HBO. Now,
when will he stop?
To be clear, the last time it was reported was in 2018. Or no, 2022.
Bye-bye.
Anyway, it might not be greenlit. It might...
Yeah.
So take that with a grain of salt. I don't know if it's still in development. I don't know. I don't know if I would want that. Why do we need a TV show? Like, we got the story. We're good.
I got it from the first one.
Yeah. We don't need 9 sequels. We're good.
And a TV show?
I don't know what you could do with that.
Yeah. That's like, I can't even like picture where it would go. I mean, maybe I need to watch all 9 other ones to be caught up to it, but I just
depending on the complex continuity.
Yes, yeah. I like it's not. It doesn't make any sense. I don't understand it. I don't understand that.
But yeah, that's all my research. Those are all my fun facts. Are you ready to dive into the book versus movie?
Yes, I am.
Alrighty. So as I mentioned already, The Box has a different name in both the book and the film. In the book, it's made by some French guy, so it's Le Marchand's Configuration. I said that really badly. I can't do much better than that. But in the film, it's called the Lament Configuration, which I prefer because it's easier to say. And now, even how it's described is different. In the book, it's described as being like sleek and black, right?
Yeah.
You like can't see the actual puzzle pieces. Like it just looks like a cube, yes. A black cube. Yeah. But in the film, it has like, it's made of wood and has like these metal things in the outside of it.
Like designs or something like that where like you can see definite separations. Exactly. Not like super crazy, but you can tell like there's a design where it's like, okay, like if I mess with this, mm-hmm. maybe that's why
they figured it out so quickly. Yeah,
Frank and Kirsty got themselves in trouble because it was a little too conspicuous.
Yeah. The way they described it in the book, and I'm going to shift in my seat a little bit. But the way they described it in the book is like, oh my God, people could spend half a lifetime trying to figure out this puzzle. And then it's like Frank and Kirsty figured out in like 5 minutes.
Yeah. No, it was ridiculous. That was a little
weird, but whatever. I guess they had to rush through it. It's a short book. It's a short movie, so.
And why did Frank do all the candles in a square? He was like, oh yeah, I don't want to do a circle on the ground.
But it's a
like
square symbols. Is
let
fine.
Let me do a square with a bunch That's of candles. That's a good
point. I totally forgot about that.
No, that was like, I thought that was a weird choice, but, you know.
It wasn't necessary?
No.
Oh, this was in the film.
In the film,
yeah. Maybe just visually it looked cool. There's no actual reasoning for it. I don't know.
And he's all sweaty and nasty and disgusting. Oh, dude, his fingernails in the opening scene.
Oh, I hated that. Ugh. Most disgusting thing in the movie, terrible. For real.
Mm-hmm. Terrible.
Yeah. Well, speaking of, Frank gets the box from a man named Kircher. Kircher? I don't know. He gets this box from a guy named Kircher while traveling in the book. But in the film, he gets it from a guy in Morocco, mm-hmm. a salesman. And we don't know much about this guy, but somehow he has this box and he keeps having this box.
He's a little creepy dude.
Yeah, he's a creepy dude. And yeah, those nails are...
What is your pleasure? I don't know. Leave me the fuck alone. This is an Arby's. Holy shit. Yeah. Hell no. Don't pick up random boxes from strangers on the street. PSA.
Well, that's the thing is like in the book, we get a little bit of backstory about this box in the sense that like there's different. We don't know about these other things, but there are other. I don't even know how to describe it. Like the box is just one way for you to access this other world.
Yes.
But there's other things, but they don't dive into what they are. He just heard about this box and wanted this box.
Yes.
It's like rumors. And then he eventually found this guy that had it somehow.
Yeah.
Because he's like a traveler and somehow he gets money through illegal activity.
Yeah.
And then he loses his money. And then so he's got a lot of issues, this Frank.
Yeah. I thought that was, I mean, we'll get into it in like the differences, but I thought that was interesting how they like showed him wanting to even get it. Like how, like his want from it, because I mean, in the book, it was very much like he had exhausted all of his routes of sexual deviousness mm-hmm. and total trigger warning, like terrible things that book Frank was like doing. God. I mean, they absolutely like inferred that Frank was like a villain and he was a bad guy and he was aggressive. And I mean, like
the way he treats Julia and Kirsty in the film
and the terrible
too.
Pictures of those women that he had in his box. Like it's definitely inferred that he's bad, but like in the
he's
book,
not he's, a romantic figure at all.
No, but in the book he is like devious. Like he's like bordering on like, trigger warning, like necrophilia and like just crazy.
He's done everything imaginable that a person could do.
Yes. And it still is just not enough. He cannot be satiated, where it was a little bit more in the movie. It felt like it was a type of, I don't know how to say it, self-harm. Like, because he's just like, he's just going and going and going and like doing all these terrible things. And like, we know that he's just like been doing like awful things to himself and like other than like the sexual devious stuff, like he's just like a terrible guy. And so he kind of gets this as like, ooh, like this is like my next big thing, whereas like Frank has been like hunting for his next sexual experience. And it's just like, ooh, it was kind of like going, because I went from movie to book and it was kind of a rough like adjustment to be like, ooh, very, very descriptive of what's going on in his little noggin.
That opening with Frank is very expo-dumpy, and not in the way that that's a bad thing, but like you learn a lot about Frank and what he's been up to. So just fair warning, he sucks. He sucks.
He's terrible.
But yeah, speaking of that opening, Frank is tortured differently by the Cenobites. The book is crazy. So in the film, it's really quick. He gets pulled apart by these chains.
Yeah.
It's a cool scene. But like in the book, I don't know how they would do this visually because it is so much in his head, but basically the Cenobites make his senses like heightened.
Yes.
Talking taste, smell, hearing, sight. Even memories.
Yeah, memories, yeah.
It's crazy. Like, and what then he gets, yeah. He's blind at some point too.
Yeah.
He becomes blind. It's kind of hinted at, but when he masturbates and fluid is on the ground, that is his link to this world.
And that and that was a classic. Y'all want to know the word that he used in that book? He said he released his spunk onto the floor. I've
never heard that.
And I was like, there's no fucking way that I just like, and I was going to say read, the way I heard some like random narrator go spunk.
Oh yeah, you listen to the audiobook.
Yeah, I listened to the audiobook and I was like, damn, he just like, he's like going through like torture and he just lets one out on the floor.
Well, I was trying to remember, I literally had to go back and reread it because I was like, how did we get from this to this? But it was because of his memories of how he has treated women in the past.
Yeah.
Came to the forefront and it made him so aroused that even though he's being tortured,
yes.
He still has to let one out.
And that's literally the entire thing about the Cenobites and the whole movie. Everything in the book, everything is just like there's equal balance of pleasure,
yep,
and pain,
yep,
and torture and beauty and disgust, mm-hmm. And it's like throughout the entire movie, which I thought with the movie did a great job at keeping that theme up the entire time.
Yeah,
but yeah, it's definitely interesting,
and it makes sense from Clive Barker's experience working as an escort at, yes, these clubs, and yes, also he himself has said that he engages with S&M. I think King. I read that he was like, I'm probably a 6 out of 10 on the sliding scale. I'm like, what does that mean? Oh, actually, I don't want to know what
no,
that means.
Yeah.
But I'm just like, okay, this makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
And his other writing makes a lot of sense. Candyman, like, is this scary figure, but he's also kind of alluring in a way.
Yeah.
And so I just like, these are such good companion films and companion pieces to, mm-hmm, explore. If you're like new in the world of horror and your only experience is like Stephen King, Clive Barker is like the anti-Stephen King. He gets straight to the point.
Yeah.
He's detailed, but not in an obnoxious way.
Yeah.
I hate on Stephen King a lot on this podcast. So.
I know you do. I've seen the episodes.
Okay.
Yeah. That poor man.
I'm sorry.
Run him his money.
If you want to be on it, I'm not going to complain.
You get Stephen King on the podcast. That would be fucking crazy.
He hates me more than Stanley Kubrick.
Stop, though. That would be crazy. Anyway.
Another difference, which took you by surprise, is that the main guy, the main husband. The husband.
Her main piece, yeah. Her main piece and then a side piece, Frank, yeah.
True.
Yeah, valid.
He has a different name. In the film, his name is Larry, but in the book, his name is Rory.
I was so confused. I literally, like, it took me so long to realize that it was the same character. I literally, like, got probably more than halfway through the book, and I was like, wait a minute.
That's the dad.
That's him.
Yeah.
Same thing with Kiersey. The fuck?
Oh, we'll get to that next.
Sorry, yeah.
But yeah, I think this has to do with, like, changing the location. Rory is more of a British name.
Rory.
I was thinking Doctor Who. Yeah, that's my only experience with a Rory. I can't think of any other Rorys.
Painfully British. Actually, yeah, that's painfully British. Yeah. Valid. So. Larry. He was like, let me think of like an American name.
Larry.
Yeah. The fuck? Reginald.
Didn't take too long on that one, mm-mm, probably.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, as Aiden mentioned, Kiersey is in both versions. But in the film, she's Larry's daughter. But in the book, she's Rory's coworker / friend who has an unrequited crush on him. Very different Kiersties.
Was very grossed out.
Very surprising. Yeah.
I was very grossed out until he figured out what was going on. And I was like, what the fuck? Yeah. I just was like, oh my God, this is like so incestuous.
Yep.
Incestuous. I was like, where did it come from? And then I was like, oh, okay. Different relationship, different vibe, thank God.
Yeah.
Not that crazy.
I Wish I could find like why he wanted to make that change.
I think it worked better
as being his daughter.
Yes. Okay. Genuinely, like it felt like there was a reason for Kirstie to constantly be checking up on him. Like, other than it just being like an unrequited crush, like you're not gonna go and like
stalk somebody, see if she's cheating.
If you are, go to jail. But exactly, yeah, like you wouldn't do that. So that would make sense that it's like, oh no, it's a daughter checking up on her father. It's, you know, like that's still, but I think that really did help a lot in the movie that would have, that made it flow a lot better, in my opinion.
I think, I mean, I enjoyed both versions of this character. I think her in the book is such an interesting character, like getting into her head and how she feels about Rory. And she's like jealous of Julia for obvious reasons. Also, Julia is like supposed to be a bombshell in the book. Like everybody finds her gorgeous. Not in the movie. Not in the movie. That haircut is crazy.
Yeah, sorry to my queen. Sucks. That's, yeah. And I know that that's just the times. That was the times. But it was just like,
I'm like, this is who everyone's obsessed with. That's crazy. How is she
picking up dudes at the bar?
I mean, guys are, the bar is pretty low for men. Let's be real.
Guys are freaks. Valid. Yeah.
But yeah, I just found her like always wanting to be at the parties, being around him, wanting to help out when they're moving in. I don't know. I found her an interesting character.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. But it makes more sense with her being the daughter. I think she's like a good final girl. She has some goofy moments, but I think she's,
of course,
she's got some cool moments.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
So there is some backstory that is in the book. It's a minor thing, but the reason they don't want to use quote unquote Frank's room or the attic is because Julia has just a weird vibe from it off the get. Like
it's
she,
damp. It's
she
wet.
Calls it damp. She calls it the damp room, even though it's not. It's fine. Yeah. And Rory is like, are you sure? Like, we could use this as a master bedroom. And she's like, no, we cannot. Yeah. We have to use another room. Like, she just has a vibe from it off the get.
Yeah.
But she also has a fascination with it. Like, she's constantly visiting this room. Yes. Even before she knows Frank is there. She's just like, she's drawn into it.
Yes.
For some reason. And then, of course, Frank appears and she's always there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Crazy.
But I thought that was an interesting backstory because they don't really dive into it in the film at all.
No.
They have like three. Okay, that house has so many stairs in the film. Like, it would be obnoxious.
Oh, ridiculous.
Yeah.
Terrible layout.
No, awful.
Fire that architect.
Literally. Terrible. I would not want to live there.
No.
I don't even care if it's a free house.
No, absolutely not.
Maybe in this market. Maybe I'd take a house with a dead man.
No, like actually,
coming to life.
Yeah.
I just won't bleed in there.
Yeah, period.
Well, no periods.
I was going to say, not that time of the month.
Wait, how does that work? Ew. Actually, I don't want to think of the logistics.
Stop, bro. He's sucking on a tampon. Sorry. Sorry. Terrible.
That is
terrible.
Nasty.
Terrible.
I feel like Clive Barker would actually... I think he would find that an interesting conversation to be had.
Oh, absolutely.
That's what I meant to say.
My king.
I just did not know how to finish that sentence. So another difference is how Larry cuts his hand. So in the film, he accidentally cuts it on a nail while he's bringing the bed up.
Oh,
I hated that moment. That was so cringy. I had to like look away.
Yeah.
Oh. And then, but in the book, he accidentally stabs himself. And then he like, in both versions, it's so silly when he rushes to Julia. He's like, Julia, take it. Help me.
Pussy. Little bitch.
It is.
Okay, I understand being, like, afraid of blood. Like, I'm not saying that people that are afraid of
blood. But having her deal with it?
Yeah.
Lame.
Come on now.
Loser behavior, for
come
real.
Come on now.
I mean, I know it's just an excuse to get him into that room, but it still was like,
Yeah, it was, yeah, it seemed a little... weird.
Yeah, a little forced.
Yeah.
Moving on to the middle of the film, Kirstie has a boyfriend. This is a character Hello. Just for the film. And they even have a scene where they go on a date. So
thought it was very interesting.
Yeah. I didn't really he seemed like he was dubbed too. His accent was pretty weird.
Yeah.
He looked British too. just had a vibe. I was like, that's not his real voice. That is a British man. So Kirsty has a bad dream in the film that is not in the book at all. It's this dream where there's like feathers falling from the sky and a corpse is drenched in blood. Like, what was the point of this?
Yes.
I was confused. Do you know? No. Did you vibe with the scene at all? No. Because I did not.
No, it was like out of nowhere.
It really felt out of nowhere. And those are, that's kind of why the film didn't vibe with me as much, because of moments like that that like took me out of it a little bit.
Yeah.
I can think of that. I can think of when Frank is like, come to daddy. And it's like the slow motion. I was like, it was cutting from that to Kirsty, and we're jumping ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
Her about to pass out. And it's like, come to daddy. And he keeps saying it. I'm like, we get it.
Yeah.
Stop it.
Yeah.
Just weird filmmaking choices. Yes. Like that, that were not as good as I feel like the storytelling in the book.
I think I'm just such a big fan of, I think the effects and like the storyline overall, like, is really what drew me in. But there were a lot of really silly moments. But I liked it. It still was like, it was still a fun ride.
Yeah.
It was still a fun ride.
Another one I think of is when she has the box and it, he's like, give me that or something in the attic. And she's like, she looks at, she's like, no. I know. It was so funny. I love that line delivery. That's not even me being like, that's a bad moment. It was like actually funny. And yes. I don't know if that was intentional, but like it got me. It's such a good moment. She's beautiful. Like, no.
Yeah.
She had some funny moments like that.
Sassy queen.
Moving from Kirsty to Julia, in the book, she goes to like these shady dive bars to seduce men. But in the film, she goes to this like really high class joint. And I was like, what? Why just in the middle of the day?
Yeah.
It doesn't fit the vibe of a Clive Barker story. It doesn't fit the grittiness, the grime, how gross it is.
Yes.
And I feel like the type of people that would go to a dive bar are likely to go with a random woman to her house.
100%.
And so it just like felt really weird.
And if you're going to like this classy club, like there's probably some chance that somebody knows that you're there and like they're going to be more likely to look for you, where these dive bars were like just random men that were in a bar and they're already shady and no one's going to go looking for them. Like it's whatever.
Mm-hmm. They're keeping their second life to themselves because as we know in both the film and the book, they tend to be guys that are cheating on their wives. So it would make sense why they would go to these like more hidden bars.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
So I didn't really care for that change, to be honest.
No.
Didn't really fit. Another change with Julia is that she attacks victims in the film with a hammer, but uses a knife in the book. Did you have much of an opinion on this change?
Why did they make it more violent? Or like, why would she prolong? Why did they choose to prolong it with the hammer? I didn't really understand why that change. I mean, again, like, came from the movie first, watched the movie a bunch of times, and then I've read the book twice within like the last month. So like I still like the nostalgia of it. I'm still like, oh yeah, like the movie's great. But it still is like, yeah, you know what? Book Julia was onto something. Stab him with a fucking knife. That like gets the job done faster. Mm-hmm. Instead of having to bash him over the head.
Yeah.
That's That was just like unnecessary change. Or was it for a reason?
I don't know the reason behind it. I have no clue.
I mean, I don't know if it was like to make her seem more violent. It was just interesting. It could
be because something that's interesting about Julia's character, she starts to enjoy killing. And so maybe that's the reason is like, oh, she's kind of liking this lifestyle. She likes to torture people. And I don't know, maybe that's to hammer it home. That was stupid. I did not mean to do that. That was unintentional.
Add like a vine boom. Add a vine boom after that. That was crazy.
I did enjoy in the book when she's like trying to get the knife out of the jacket pocket.
Yeah.
And she's like struggling a little bit. I thought that was a little fun.
Yeah.
Like she's obviously never done this before. And she's like trying to like keep this guy's attention, but also like trying to get the knife secretly.
Yes.
I thought it was fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a lot more playful, it felt like, in the book too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So one of the scenes that was added was Kirsty working at a pet shop in the film. Mm-hmm. And this took me by surprise. I totally forgot about the scene where the guy who's stalking her starts eating crickets. He just dips his hand in some crickets and starts eating them.
And her face, valid.
My God.
Her, she made like the perfect face because that's the face that literally any of us would have fucking made. Like, what do you even do in that situation?
What do you even do?
Put those back. Put that down right now. Holy shit, bro. Where's Walmart AP? Have them tackle him outside the door. Yeah. That's crazy. Ooh.
Oh my God. And the sound effects.
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah.
A lot of good sound effects that just make you so unnerved when watching this.
Yeah.
Ugh. But I kind of liked the Kirsty in this film because she does have a life outside of what's going on. Yeah. Like, she has a job. She has her own place.
Yeah, because, I mean, like, her dad was begging her to come live with them. And she was like, no, like, I have my own life. Chilling. Like, give me some space. We're good.
I don't want to live with Julia.
Yeah, exactly.
Valid.
Yeah, completely.
Totally taking a left turn here. The scene where Larry is initiating sex with Julia and Frank cuts open a rat. That's
more symbolism.
That's only in the film.
Yeah.
Oh my God. That was awful.
That terrible.
That was brutal to watch.
Disgusting. Mm-hmm. But definitely more symbolism. Like,
how so?
I was seeing like the pleasure with the pain, the beauty with the disgust. Like, that was like she was in the middle of like having sex with her husband, which should have been like.
But she hates him.
Okay. Yeah. Valid. Valid.
Already. Yeah. It's not a fun time.
Yeah. No, there was no symbolism.
No, I see what you mean.
Yeah, I mean, but it still was like, yeah, but I totally forgot that she was absolutely disgusted. Loathing it. And then that just made it so much worse. And then she started crying. And then Larry was like, I don't understand. Yeah. You're jumping me. And then, like, now you don't even want me. And I'm like, bro, dude, give her like 5 minutes. Yeah. She literally just saw her dead ex start cutting open a rat over your body. While you were going to pound town, bro. I'm scared.
Oh my God.
I'm scared. Give her some, like, time.
But he does have a feeling that something's off with Julia.
100%.
So in the book, he's calling Kirstie's like, hey, can you check in on my wife? For some reason, I guess they're close enough for him to feel comfortable to do that.
Yeah. Interesting.
But in the film, there's a scene in this Chinese restaurant where Larry's like confiding with Kirstie. He's like, something's wrong with her. I just feel off. And he like convinces her to go in and check on her. Mm-hmm. And it's also a bit different because in the book, he's asking her to go check on Julia, mm-hmm. To see if Kirstie also gets a weird vibe. But in the film, Larry's like, can you just try to make friends with Julia? Like, it was more of, like, a friendly thing.
Yes.
It was not as shady.
Yeah.
I feel like in the film.
Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. Like, why would you ask your coworker to go check on your wife?
I don't know. I wanted to know, I feel like in both versions, I wanted to know more about this guy. Like,
yeah.
I feel like he's kind of, he's put to the side a bit.
Yes.
And I wanted to know, like, what does he think about Kirstie in the book? Like, is he really just, like, that oblivious?
Yeah.
Or does he know? And maybe he's, like, using it to, like, get favors from her.
Yeah. You're so smart.
I don't know.
Good idea.
I don't know.
Good thoughts.
I'd be interested to know more about him and what's going on in his head.
Yeah.
Because we get a lot of Kirstie, we get a lot of Julia, a lot of Frank, but not much Larry.
Yeah.
We're coming to the end of the film in the book now. Like we said, it's very short.
Yes.
And they're pretty similar. The core story is pretty similar, but here's some more changes. In the film, Kirstie goes over to check on Julia and sees her bringing a man inside, making her think that Julia is cheating. Now, we don't get a scene like this in the book. Instead, Kirstie goes to like knock on the door. She's mm-hmm. talking to Julia. Yep. And she notices Julia is a bit flushed. She notices a man's jacket hanging next to the door. And that's when Kirstie's like, she might be cheating.
Yeah.
But she doesn't have like proof yet.
Yes.
So it's, if she goes back a couple times.
Yes.
To check on Julia in the stakeout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But in the film, they do kind of rush that, which I'm not mad about it.
Yeah, of course.
So jumping to when Kirstie's in the hospital, she opens the box a bit differently in both versions. So in the book, like we mentioned, it's a black box. It's really hard to see the puzzle pieces.
Yeah.
And she's only able to do that in the book and see them is because there's blood on the box.
Yes.
And they make like the outline of the puzzle pieces. Meanwhile, in the film, she just kind of fiddles with it and figures it out.
Yeah.
So it's less of like her intelligence. Yes. And more just like, whatever, it's a Rubik's Cube.
Yeah. Yeah. There was, again, like weird that there was no struggle when it was supposed to be one of the most difficult boxes to open.
To be fair, the book establishes that, but they don't establish that in the film at all. Yeah. So I guess to a viewer, you're just like, oh, it's a magical box that opens.
And that's world. Exactly what I thought. Yeah. Until I read the book and I was like, damn, they open that shit.
They open fast. It so fast. Yeah. Fast. Crazy. Yeah. And because she opens the box, we get a glimpse into the Cenobites' world, but it's different. So in the film, she travels through this hallway and this like worm creature, worm Cenobite, comes and tries to you don't seem to like the worm Cenobite. What's that expression?
It makes me giggle just because I'm jumping ahead, but just that part at the end when in the movie when she drops the book,
my God.
And they're playing footsie, yeah. And she just keeps like smacking the hands out of the way, that she was cracking me up. I mean, a silly visual, but I also thought, like, I appreciated it again, like just like the 80s effects, like I like the eyeballs, the way that they like blinked. I thought it was very interesting, but
and looking at it, you could tell like the work that went into it.
Oh, for like, sure.
It probably was a difficult thing to create.
Yes.
Having it move that way too. I'm sure it was on some wheels or something. But still, you can just see the like filmmaking techniques and it's you appreciate it in that regard.
Of course. Yeah.
But in the book, how the world is interesting because it kind of fades in and out and it's like this ashy dystopian kind of vibe.
Yeah.
I was kind of imagining, correct me if I'm wrong, but like Beetlejuice, like that world, not as colorful, like just bleak.
Yes.
That's how I was imagining it in the book. And that's the version she sees in the book before the Cenobites appear. But yeah, and also in the book, there's like these black birds. I didn't understand the point of the black birds. Do you remember them?
No.
Okay. Maybe they're not that big of a deal. I don't know why he kept like talking about these black birds. And I was wondering if that's why we got at the end the vagrant who turns into this like skeletal bird. Like, I don't know. Maybe it's explained in like the extended media.
Maybe.
The importance of birds. I don't know.
The importance of birds.
What's the deal with birds?
A bird scientist. Yeah.
Oh my God. So in the book, we actually see the Cenobites for the first time at the beginning with Frank. But in the film, we see them for the first time in the hospital scene with Kirstie.
Yes.
And I think I mentioned it in the synopsis, but Pinhead is not the main Cenobite. He's not the initiator. He's also like, I think he has like a girlish, like higher pitched voice in the book. That's what he's described as.
Yeah, they're all like super androgynous, whereas like the movie, like, I mean, the one that looks like Patrick Starr, that's like, who knows what that one is. Same thing with the worm, but like there was definitely like Pinhead's a boy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gendering
dark voice.
I'm
gonna dark voice, deep voice.
Yes. Yeah. But yeah, he was a boy
and she was a girl.
Yep. Yeah,
can we make it any more obvious?
Absolutely. Yeah. No, we can't. No, but that, yeah, the one that had the wire around her head, that was definitely like a woman. But I kind of wish that they had done like the more androgynous thing to see what they would have done with it. But I can see that can be hard, especially like in the 80s. But
and I wonder if Pinhead would have been as popular if he didn't have such a deep, menacing voice.
Yeah.
I was wondering that if they went and made it as faithful as they did with the book in terms of this character, if because she Pinhead
queen our queen, we love her,
is like very much on the side, is kind of like, I don't know, not as a powerful a being as I feel like there's one, the main one, the like leader, I guess, has like all these chains and hooks in its flesh.
Yes.
And we don't really get that version in the film.
No.
At least not how I envisioned it. So it is interesting. I wonder if it was like a producer's idea to make Pinhead like the main one, because the imagery
is more marketable too.
Yeah. The imagery is so iconic, and it's even on this like republished book that I have on set is like Pinhead. Like that is Hellraiser. There's also we don't get really much of this character, but there's a Cenobite called the Engineer. And I don't know if there's more of that character in other media. I didn't get their purpose though in the book.
Me either.
I was expecting something to happen at the end with that.
Yes. And I remember seeing that and being like, okay, where is this going?
Yeah.
And when are they giving us nothing? Yeah.
Literally giving us nothing.
Yeah.
So jumping to the end here, the house is falling apart around Kirstie and her boyfriend, Steve. I am Steve.
Chicken Jackie. Sorry. Okay, continue.
Sorry. The house is falling apart while they're trying to escape. This does not happen in the book at all. Kirstie just leaves. And yeah, that's kind of it. She keeps the box. She decides to watch over it because she sees Julia and Frank's faces on its surface, but she doesn't see her dad's. She doesn't see Rory's face in it. So she's like wondering maybe there's another world that she can find him in.
Yes.
There's like this whole thing, like inner thoughts that she's trying to play out in the book. But in the film, she tries to burn the book. She doesn't want to keep it or the box.
Yes.
She tries to burn the box. And then, of course, the guy comes and takes it and flies away. Mr. Cricket Man.
Yeah.
So these Kirsties have different ways they want to take on this box. One wants to keep it, to watch over it. The other one wants to destroy it. And it is kind of, it reminded me of the monkey. Because in the short story, they want to destroy it. But in the newest film, they decide to keep it. And it's kind of like, in that film, we talked about how it was them accepting grief. Mm. And that's kind of what it symbolized. So I was wondering, like, I don't know, well, if there was any reasoning for these changes, if it was supposed to symbolize anything, or I don't know.
Honestly, I think they did that, like, that change because they were ready to milk it. Like, I think they were ready to milk it from, like, day one. I think they were already prepping. Mm. And, like, they were getting it ready for the sequel, whereas the book, like, I felt it did have a definitive ending. Like, it was unsettling, but it definitely was like, okay, like, this is the end.
Yeah.
And, like, same thing with, like, Julie's death. Like, because I know she's supposed to come back in the second movie.
What?
Yeah, like, she gets, like, taken by the Cerebites and then becomes, like, one of the major antagonists in the second.
I need to watch these sequels.
Yeah, same. What? Yeah, in the next one.
Oh, is it the same actress?
I don't know. Mm. That's just what I read. That it was that was why it was different. Because they were, like, why her death was different.
Mm.
I also, am I tripping? I feel like when I read the book, like, I feel like I remember her being, like, headless or something on the floor. I might have dreamt this, people. Okay.
I don't know.
I had my own little fan fiction in my head of what happened. That Kirstie found her on the ground and was begging for help. And then her head was like in her lap.
You're right. Yeah.
And she was like, you need to help me. You need to help me.
What? You're totally right. Yeah. I totally forgot about that.
What was that?
I don't know.
What was the point of that?
I don't know. Because in the film, he just like puts his hands on her and slowly her skin changes a different color. It was kind of weird.
Sucking her like a little slurpy.
Yeah, but he doesn't do that with the other corpses. He drinks their blood.
Yes.
Or whatever. But yeah, the her being headless.
And then the head begging for help.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
It's in her lap, right?
Yeah, it's in her lap. Like she's holding it.
Yeah, and it was when Kirstie was leaving.
And it was like their wedding dress.
Oh, yeah. She was in the wedding.
Yes.
Oh. Weird.
I was going to say, like, because I was, when I was, like, looking some stuff up for it, like, I was trying to, like, type that in and, like, nothing was coming up. And I was like, was that a fucking fever dream? No.
No.
I'm glad that it's not. I'm glad you remember because I was like, that's actually so crazy.
That's, yeah, I don't think that would have, I think that would have looked silly if they did that in the film. I think that would have, yeah. Because we keep hyping up the special effects, but some of them look kind of older, you know, low budget.
I'm telling you, I think they spent all that million on that little the remaking of Mr. Frank.
Yeah, they did. So yeah, some of it's a little older, you know, not as great.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like if they did try to do that with Julia, it could have come off as really silly. Like, even one of the corpses in the junk room, with the maggots coming out.
Oh,
look,
yeah.
The head looked really silly.
Yes.
The maggots were nasty, but the head itself looked silly. And I feel like there was multiple moments of that where I'm like, eh.
The quadruple chin, because it was just like super sucked dry and the eyes rolled back. Mm. I was kind of like, eh.
Quality's
silly.
Not as great, but like, I'm also not mad at it either.
And also, how did it like, because it fell forward, right? Because she disturbed it. Mm-hmm. It fell forward and then it went back. How to do that? That's crazy. I know that was literally just for a jump scare to like the audience.
Yeah.
There was like another like sound jump scare. And I was like, what was the point of that? Like in the movie, it got me. Jump scares piss me off. Yeah. Don't piss me off.
That's be earned. Needs to be earned.
Yes. 100%. Like, I want to be on the edge of my seat. I don't want to be startled by some crazy music or like some scary face or
a
whatever.
A cat meowing or hissing or whatever. I hate when that happens.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed in a lot of slasher movies of the time, they would have bodies, like I'm thinking of in Halloween and Friday the 13th, where they'd have bodies in places where I'm like, how did he have time to do that? How did he have time to put a body there? Set them all up so that there's a perfect jump scare where the body falls on the victim. And it's just like, it's stuff like that where I'm like, okay, I know you're not supposed to take it that seriously, but like, how did Michael Myers do that?
Exactly.
How did Jason do that so quickly?
Exactly.
Whatever.
I know Frank's got a little wire that's like pulling it back. He's like, oh, yeah.
Ooh. Oh my God. They should do a Hellraiser house at Halloween Horror Nights. Maybe they have, but that'd be fun. And that's perfect. It's one location.
Yeah, that would have been so sick.
That'd be cool. This is going back a bit, but the pet shop scene with the monkeys. I think that was another jump scare.
Yes,
the screaming monkeys.
I think that's what I was talking about. Okay. I was like, what the fuck?
Also, why were they selling monkeys? How was that legal?
In the 80s?
You think that was allowed? I don't know.
Let's find out. While owning monkeys as pets was not illegal in the 1980s in many places, it was a practice that was faced increasing scrutiny and concerns about animal welfare.
As it should.
Yeah. That does not really give
don't
me.
Did own pet wild shops, animals. Don't
did
do
pet
it.
Shops really sell monkeys in the 70s and 80s? Let's ask Reddit.
Ooh.
Let's see. Yes, I remember seeing them.
What?
Stop.
Great. Okay, I guess it's accurate.
Here's someone telling about an incident involving a spider monkey at a 70s pet store.
Why? That's wild.
Crazy. Don't sell monkeys.
That on top of the fact that everyone smoked everywhere makes me glad I did not live in that
In a
time.
Hospital?
That's insane. On a plane?
On a plane?
That would make being on a plane even worse.
That'd and I can't even hit my vape. What is America coming to, actually?
So those are all the differences I could find. So I have to ask, what did you prefer, the book or the film? Another hard one.
That really is a hard one. I think I would just have to say the film because it does hold such a dear place to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But the book was absolutely worth reading again.
Yeah.
Like, you
read
so
it a couple times, right?
Yes.
Before this?
Yeah. Yeah. It was, I really, really enjoyed it. And I think I just like Clive Barker.
Mm-hmm.
I always have a hard time. Clive Barker. I really enjoyed his writing style. Yeah. And now that I know that he used to be an escort and that he's dealt with like all that stuff firsthand, mm-hmm. it's going to be really interesting to like go forward and like either reread it read new things and see like where he like pulls his experiences in. Mm-hmm. And
he's also a gay man. And so he does.
But at least I'm alive.
No,
my king. Slay.
And so in a time where like you weren't really allowed to write those kinds of stories, he did in some of his horror stories. So I think it's really cool reading his stuff.
Can I totally forgot. I'm so glad I wrote notes. The way that their relationship is made, Julia and Frank.
Mm.
In the movie, it is like it's like, oh, we had like a fling and then he was like pretty aggressive, but she was into it from the beginning.
In the film.
In the film, yes. Yes. In the film.
And oh, yeah, I see what you're doing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And trigger warning, in the book, Frank did a terrible thing to her. And within that terrible thing, she went crazy. Like, obviously that breaks you. Mm-hmm. Like, and she went crazy. And I think, I'm sure, for her brain to be able to cope with it, turned it into a positive, as it yeah. does for many people. Like, it's, and it's very confusing, and it's guilt ridden, and like, it's very tragic. But I think that's why she got so much more. It seemed like she was more excited in the book to finally be like reunited with him, whereas like yeah. in the movie, like she was
more horrified. Yes, at the beginning, at least
she had that like initial like, holy shit,
this
like,
is awful.
Yeah. Yes, what am I getting myself into? Mm-hmm. And in the book, she seemed like she was ready to get her freak on.
Yeah,
and it was a little crazy.
Yeah, she totally reinvented the memory of it.
Yes,
and that was really interesting. That's a good point. I totally forgot about that change.
Yeah.
They show flashback scenes in the film of, you know, them going crazy on the night before her wedding.
Yeah.
But yeah, her stuff with Frank is really more in depth than the book.
And traumatizing. That yes. poor woman. She is a victim.
Such an interesting, like, character trait.
Yes.
I feel like I've never, in terms of stories like that, I've never got that perspective before.
Yeah.
And I totally forgot, but I'm glad you reminded me of that, because that was an yeah. interesting part of her character.
Yeah. I mean, because it was definitely like trauma based. Mm-hmm. Everything that she just endured was just like yep. terrible. So that poor woman, I don't want to, and I say poor woman loosely, because
yeah,
we know what she
murderer,
was.
But
yes.
Yeah.
But she still endured all that trauma, and that was terrifying. Also, the difference when Frank started to, like, put himself back together, Rory's blood was not enough to put himself as far back together as what the movie did. He could barely get words out, whereas mm-hmm. as soon as Frank was made in the movie,
he
was like, help me, you need yeah. to help me. And
yeah. then we could be together, Julia.
Yeah, and he was, like, automatically more, like, he immediately had all of his cunning back. Mm-hmm. Like, he was just right back into the game. He
That's
was his
point.
Old
yeah.
self. And when he was being remade in the book, you could tell that there was a lot more desperation. Like, get me out of this hell. I've been stuck. Like, you need to help me. And then as soon as he starts actually, like, getting himself together, then it's like, okay, now I'm going to pull the manipulator card and I'm going to be, like, this piece of shit. But in the beginning, it definitely was, like, desperation of, like, I will take any fucking help I can get. Like, get me out of here.
Yeah. And we do get a little bit more of what's going on in Frank's head in the book. He has no feelings for Julia
no.
at all. He is using her. He's like he actually finds Kirstie more compelling because she is more I don't know, basic or like
yes.
not as conventionally attractive as Julia.
Yeah.
Julia, he like has some negative things to say about her and is like not that impressed by her.
Yeah.
And he's just using her.
Yes.
So we get a little bit of we get a little bit more about what's going on in his head
yes.
in the book, for sure.
Terrible man.
He sucks in every way, So I think I prefer the book.
Oh, yeah, sorry. All the way
no.
back to you, so sorry.
No, I'm glad you mentioned all that. I think the storytelling is just so great and so concise and so straight to the point. And like I mentioned, the film has some kind of sillier moments that I didn't really vibe with, some directing choices, some acting choices. And the book, even though they're so similar story-wise, I feel like the book just was smoother a little bit more.
Yeah.
And I could see myself revisiting it. It's just, I don't know, his storytelling, every time I've read a book by Clive Barker, I was just so impressed every single time. And even though he wrote the screenplay for the film, it did feel like some new, he's very much a newer screenwriter when he did
yeah.
this. And it came across a little bit like that. The way it would cut to scenes was a little jarring
yes.
sometimes. But like, yeah, I don't know. I think the book is just a perfect little story. Perfect little creepy house story. This versus that. Do you prefer Lemur Chin's configuration versus Lament's configuration? You're stunned. You're silent.
Lament.
Lament, yeah.
Lament.
You prefer Lament.
Man of Lamentia. Isn't that a musical or something?
What?
Man of La Mancha?
I don't know what that is.
No, I'm not crazy. Wait, hold on. The Man of Dementia. Hold on.
Oh my God.
Oh, it's a musical. Uh-huh. It's a musical and you don't know it.
Man of Mancha.
This is like the Man musical.
Man of La Mancha.
Man of La Mancha. Man of La Mancha.
Are you going to add it to your quiz, your musical quiz?
Oh yeah, I still got to make that.
What was the, what add was the
me
site?
On, add me on Li Wu Fu Fu.
Just learned about this today. I think I'm going to go with Lemur Chan's configuration. Not going off name. The name sucks. But going based off the design, I think it is really cool.
You didn't tell me what the fucking qualifications for.
Remember, you could
go. No, I don't remember.
From the last episode, I was like gut instinct.
Then the French one.
Okay. So
the French do it better.
You prefer the French one. Okay.
Yeah. No, because... exactly what you said. I think the design was better. I think the way that like it is supposed to be a very difficult puzzle to get mm-hmm. into, because I mean, wasn't the whole thing for like the Cenobites to be able to
Cenobite?
Oh, I always say Cenobites. Sorry. Sorry. Yeah, the whole thing was that the Cenobites were doing these horrible, wonderful acts to these people that deserved it, because the people that knew about the bugs knew what it was.
Yeah.
They didn't know the extent. Obviously, like, Frank was very surprised.
Yeah.
But they knew that it was to give them, like, super immense pleasure. And, like, if the box was super easy to open, I mean, it literally did fall into the wrong hands. Kirsty got a hold of it, and she's not a sexual deviant, and... that was just like unfortunate, but that's why it made sense to me why it was so, it should be harder to open.
I agree.
Because it was made for the people that like worked at it, you know?
Well, they even mentioned like that sometimes somebody would come across it that didn't know of its intentions at all. They mentioned that to Kirsty, I think in the book, okay, where they're like, this has happened before where like somebody's opened it accidentally, but they do still
say that.
Yeah. But they still are like, sucks to suck.
You're
still dealing with it.
Skill issue. That's crazy.
So that was an interesting little backstory on the box. So
yeah.
Oh, we didn't even talk about the guy who created it in the book. He's like this birds again. Why are there all these birds? So it the French guy who made it also made these like bird robots or like bird animatronics. Bird animatronics. And so he also made this box. So I'm like, why do we keep talking about birds?
That's so interesting.
Yeah.
That's so interesting. And I feel like I just got a flashback again. Might be tripping. It might be a fever dream. But like, I feel like I remember, because I swear to God, I started the second one. And I remember how it opens up, because I think it like, the way it opens up on the box again, but it looks like it's in a collector's piece. And I remember seeing birds. I might be crazy, but I remember seeing birds. What is up with the birds?
I don't know. Let us know in the comments.
Great movie.
What is up with the birds?
The birds.
Yeah. Not the Alfred Hitchcock film.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Phenomenal movie.
Good movie, but we're not talking about that one.
Yeah.
Next, this versus that. Frank's intense senses versus being hooked. Which do you prefer? Let me clarify. Which would you rather have to go through as a form of torture?
If I could pick as a positive, probably hook me up genuinely.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
As long as you're not ripping me apart.
Oh my God.
Then just hook me up. Because honestly, I've been overstimulated.
Bro.
I know what that feels like. That's crazy.
It's literally like going into a Trader Joe's. Going in. That's my torture.
That is the
That's
box.
All the Cenobites would need to do. Find the macaroons.
Stupid. Oh my God. That's so funny. Yeah, that's nuts.
I'm a disagree. I'd rather deal with the intense senses. It would suck, but getting hooked?
Yeah.
Heck no. Heck no.
Okay, but that was another, like, silly little, the effects were funny.
Yeah, the skin, the hooking through the skin looks kind of fake.
Yeah, I don't know if they use, like, pig skin or something. They use some type of very porous, weird, stretchy skin for it. But, I mean, it got the point across. It just was weird.
But I was imagining in the book when he did get, because he did get hooked too in the book, right?
Yes.
I imagine them as like big, like thick hooks. But in the movie, they're like little tiny hooks.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just me imagining it different.
No, I'm imagining that too. Like I'm imagining like Supernatural, Dean goes to hell.
Yeah.
And he's on the spit and he's being pulled apart.
Because I feel like the thin ones would just rip through the skin. Like they wouldn't grasp.
It was okay. That was also kind of killing me in the movie when he's going after Kirstie and he's in Larry's skin and they like he finally admits to it, and so they hook the thing through his hand, and like you said, fishing hook, and he's like oh, and like acting like he's getting like dragged all the way back, and I'm like, bro, just let it rip your hand open. Literally. You're okay. Run.
Yeah,
you're good, bro.
You can get another skin.
Yes,
you're chill.
Yeah. A lot of, sorry, I just wanted to bring that up again. More of that, like, symbolism between, like, the masochism and the, you know, like, the beauty and the ugly and the sex and the pleasure and the disgust. And I really did like, because, I mean, it was horror. Like, he knew that he was going back. Like, and he knew that he was fucked. Like, mm-hmm. There's no escaping this time. They're going to keep a good eye on him.
And it's going to be worse this time. That's the vibe I got.
But it was like, once his face is all stretched out, he's got all the hooks in his face and he's staring at Kirstie right before the line. He's staring at Kirstie and he like starts smiling and he starts licking his lips. Ooh. Because again, it's just that like pleasure with the pain, and he like endured it for how many years was he trapped by them?
Well, yeah. I mean, it seemed like he lived in that house for a few months. And then the family moved back there a couple years afterwards.
Okay.
So but who knows how time works in that universe. Yes,
exactly. It could feel like it was like 1,000 years when it was only like 2. Yeah. But yeah, he like the licking of the lips, and then he's looking at Kirstie, and because I'm sure he knows that this shit's about to traumatize her. And she knows that too. Because she like, as soon as he says the line, she books it the fuck out of the room. She's like, I'm not going to watch my dad get ripped apart. Mm. That's traumatizing. I'm not gonna deal with that. But yeah, he gets the hooks in his face and he starts licking his lips and he's smiling and he's laughing, and then he delivers that iconic line, Jesus wept. Mm-hmm. And oh chills every time just like thinking about it. Just so good. I am so happy that he decided to just pull that out of his ass. Mm-hmm. And it just worked so perfect. I loved it. Sorry. Yes, hooks. Hook me up, baby.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I do want to talk a little bit about this one thing that bothered me in the film is when Frank has on Larry's skin and you see all the blood like around his face. And how did Kirstie not notice? How did she not notice?
Are you joking? Are you joking?
Like, bro.
It took for him to say like, come to daddy.
For her to realize something was off.
Yeah. There's blood all over him.
Yeah.
That's so nuts.
Weird. I was like, literally, just look at him.
Yeah.
Open your eyes and look at him.
Yeah. Very unobservant daughter you have. So sorry.
Oh, my God. Because in the book, it's described like he has like some blood, but it's not as, I don't think it's as obvious. At least
prominent.
It's not as prominent. And I could totally see why she would like not catch it at first.
Yes.
But in this film, I'm like,
it was bro. All the way around the face.
Yeah. Come on now.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Yeah.
Those are all my this versus that's.
Okay.
Thank you for joining me on this episode. It was very fun. I'm
so happy to be here. Yeah. And you know, it's one of my favorites. And I can't wait to eventually come back and do Amityville. That's going to be fun.
We're going to be ripping it to shreds.
That's going
to
be so fun. That's going to be another one that we should like FaceTime and watch it together. I think that'd be fun.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Join us next episode. Me and Sam are going to be covering Jaws, the start of our summer blockbuster series. So check it out. Follow us on social media at, you're doing the music. You're doing the John Williams score.
Gotta get you. Better watch out.
Getting us all hyped up for it. Follow us at Dreadful Digest Pod on Instagram and TikTok and Facebook. And yeah, thank you for watching. Thanks for listening. Bye.
Bye.